the 7:30 posted time for our Thursday, March 1st, 2007 council study session. So let's go ahead and proceed. Item number one is to review items on the agenda for the March 5th regular council meeting. And we have a packet of information if you want to grab that. Typical starting of the meeting on page one, page two, consent agenda, minutes, public hearings on three annexations, CBG funding and others. Under number four, we have public hearing. We'll hear some information about that later this morning. We get into liquor license applications. Continuing on page three, additional liquor license applications. Mike.
Mayor, I got an email yesterday from the bistro. Did they get their building permit squared away?
I asked either Terry or Bob, who wants to, maybe fire should probably, there was an on-site inspection. Maybe you ought to give us an update.
Right. Currently, that is not on the consent, so why don't we see if we can put it on?
Mayor Hawker, Council Member Whalen. We did meet again yesterday with the owner of Hess Bistro, and we are still unable to approve the liquor license application at this time. We're working through some significant code issues.
So it appears that they won't be ready to go on Monday?
That's correct. They will not.
Okay. All right. Rex.
Yeah, it just shows that when we're redoing our zoning codes and looking at it, when you take an 1899 building at an old restaurant there and you put brand new equipment in there, these tend to trigger a lot of new codes and things that makes it very difficult to come into compliance. So it's sort of a catch-22. You get a safer building technically than the old one that was there, yet it doesn't meet the brand new codes. So it's a interesting quandary that I think we're gonna have to work through and look at our new zoning revisions, whether we allow a stepped up system from getting to an old building to a new building and still have a safer building than we started with. So it'll be an interesting discussion coming up.
Okay, thank you. That's page three. Page four, have contracts for us. Continuing on page five. I assume that 7G is a potential conflict for?
Yes, Mayor, minimal amount of asphalt, but asphalt.
Okay, I'll declare conflict on 7G and then refrain from discussion and voting on that Monday. Page six, introduction of ordinances. Would like to take 8C off the consent. That's the portable business identification signs.
Just the intro.
Oh, that's true. No, I'll leave it on for the intro. Good point. Thanks for.
We'll have it on the next week, I promise.
Just shot across the bow here. Let's see where that one ends up. All right. Page seven. And I think we're back up at Riverview on 8E, so I have a conflict and believe Tom does too on that one. Mm-hmm. All right, so we'll keep 8E off consent. On 9A, that had to do with the STS service and Dial-A-Ride. It mentions Dial-A-Ride. I like the $100,000 cap that's in place. What's the status of the Dial-A-Ride budget? Because we had talked about not extending that service beyond the required federal mandate or extending it and watching that budget.
Right.
How are we doing this year?
Mayor, we have some significant concerns. I'm meeting with staff later today, and we want to come back to the council in a study session because we are seeing some, I guess, movement from different services, and it is creating some significant budget pressures that we need to visit with the council about.
Okay, significant as in like millions?
A million, I think, is
very close to a million, Mayor.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I had heard too. So let's take a look at that one before we get to a point where we've got to make that decision. All right. Is the STS the $100,000 cap? They mentioned rides per month also. Does that then stop at a certain date after they hit it, or how do they regulate the 100,000 and the services that are provided? How do they figure out who gets the ride and who doesn't.
Essentially, the way it works is we buy a certain number of trips from Maricopa County, which runs the Special Transportation Services Program. So we contract for a certain number of trips. That's the way it works, basically.
Do you contract for $100,000 worth, or do you do it on a month basis?
It's on a monthly or quarterly basis, but yes, the contract is for not to exceed $100,000 worth of their service.
Okay.
And they give us a price quote.
Still not quite sure if you could use it all up in 3 months, or you stop at the end of 20 days in the first month and 25 days the second month. How does it work?
Well, as you'll recall, in recent years, the cost of this service has gone up quite a bit. I think that for quite a long time, the cost was around $30,000 or $32,000 a year. Recently, it went up to about $60,000 over a period of about 2 years. And it had a lot to do with the fact that they converted from a volunteer driver program to having to pay their drivers due to insurance issues. That drove that price up quite a bit. But the cost for this service is less than Dollar Ride, so the thought was that we would be better off paying for this service.
I'm still not asking my question very well. I'm trying to figure out, if I want to ride at the end of the month on the 28th for a doctor's appointment, will there still be any service available, or should I try to put my doctor's appointment in on the first or the second of the month before the funding runs out to pay for the drivers? How's that?
It's prorated over the year, but we do have enough funds to meet the demand for this service.
Okay. Vice Mayor.
Jeff, I've heard that, and this question kind of goes to both 9A and 9B. I've heard that Phoenix has been turning down riders every month. Is that right?
Mayor, Vice Mayor, they have rejected some trips. And I don't know if it's on a monthly basis. We had heard that they'd rejected several thousand trips over a period of time. That's not something I would recommend. That could jeopardize our federal funding. It's technically, that is not something that you can do and be in compliance with federal law.
Well, that was my question. How were they doing that? On what basis were they doing that?
Well, Phoenix is the designated grant recipient, federal grant recipient, and they contract directly with a service provider. So they have a better ability to control their service and can actually, through their provider actually, I guess, do that and regulate the number of trips. We contract with RPTA, and I've been in contact with RPTA, and they will not violate federal law and reject trips.
Okay, well, when this comes back, we're going to have some more conversation about that. On the Ride Choice program, which is 9B, is it okay if I ask a question
please.
On 9B?
Mm-hmm.
On the Ride Choice program, which is 9B, we get more trips per dollar.
Right, exactly.
That's the best way I can think of saying that. On the Ride Choice program, initially we had put in, can you remind me how much money we put in Ride Choice for this year?
For this year we have $350,000. That's $150,000 more than we'd budgeted for previously.
Okay, so it's $150,000 more than we had in the budget.
Exactly.
Right, because I saw the $350,000 here, but I couldn't remember what the budgeted amount was.
Right.
Okay, so we were at $200,000. So we've got $150,000 more. I know I was talking to Dan Taylor over at the Senior Center. He said you folks had given him the green light to advertise more, let people know more. From my perspective, if we can do more of this, it helps us on the other side. And I know this council has been pushing in that direction for some time.
Mm-hmm.
But my understanding is that message might not have gotten through as clearly as it needed to get through.
And you're right, Vice Mayor. We need to advertise more to get that usage up there. We were hitting the when the program was funded at $200,000, the usage was at that level. But we're diverting trips from Dial-A-Ride, and a lot of people would much prefer to use Dial-A-Ride as opposed to using a taxi cab and that kind of thing. And so we have to advertise and really get out and encourage people to use this program. And so what we're finding is to get to that $350,000 level, we're going to need to advertise and get out and hustle more to get people to ride it more, to use that full $350,000 allocation.
And this goes to the heart of my frustration, as you know, as I've told you probably like 200 times, that there is no rational basis for this. You don't say to somebody, here's 200 monopoly dollars of transportation money, now go and figure out how you can get the most transportation for this. And as a result, I don't think I don't think it serves us well. And it isn't a MESA issue. This is a federal issue. I want to make that really clear. I'm not hitting on MESA. We have done, I think, as good a job as anybody has done on this, but it just doesn't, the federal policy does not allow us to help urge people in that direction in a more substantial way. Thank you.
You're right, and you know, the one thing that the region is doing is they are studying the dollarite issue, as you know, and I think they started that study about 6 months ago. It probably still has another year just about to run. We asked them to come back early and give us some recommendations on the whole issue of certification for ADA dollarite. And so they're going to do that probably this spring, and we'll see what those recommendations are. But it's also important to know that the other cities are not experiencing the problem that we are yet, because they still have senior dollarite. So they don't have a problem yet with people moving from senior dollarite to ADA service. So we're going to have to grapple with trying to get the other cities to recognize that this is a problem that they're going to be dealing with as these costs continue to rise, and they can't afford senior dollarite over time. So.
Yes, Rex.
Just to clarify, a dollarite, it's gets picked up. You pick up several other people. You don't know when you're going to get to your doctor appointment. It's very expensive, bureaucratic.
Right.
The ride choice allows coupons for cabs, different ways of getting more efficient, more private funded or private enterprise type. What other things besides coupons for cabs and other things that allows people to get to doctor appointments, et cetera, that are handicapped?
Well, you know, that's one of the things that we're looking at as part of this dial-ride study is other alternatives to dial-ride. We're using two of the what they call user-side subsidies, the dial-ride program and the program where people are reimbursed if they get someone to drive them. They get reimbursed for the mileage for that trip. Those are the two programs that we have. Scottsdale has a program where they have a contract with a taxi cab company that takes people to dialysis and things like that, and I think we've asked RPTA to look at that as well, because quite a few of those trips are using dial-a-ride. So we're looking to use what they call a DAR car or a dial-a-ride car, which is more of a taxi program that we would contract through RPTA for, to try to divert more of those trips away from dial-a-ride and see if we can't use a less expensive program, because it's less expensive to hire, quite frankly, a taxi company to provide those trips for dialysis and things like that, where they don't need to get into a big van that's handicap access and that kind of thing. So we're looking at every possible way we can to try to save money or reduce our costs in this program. Unfortunately, the demographics work against us on this, because there's more and more seniors and that kind of thing. So.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Tom.
Buddy, done on that, because I need to go back a page.
Go ahead.
On page 6, item 8C, I just was remembering the council discussion in August as well as reading the minutes. I'm gone on the 19th, and it appeared to me that was a fairly close vote back, or close direction back in August. So I'm just wondering whether we want to set it for the first week in April, or can we continue it on the 19th to the first week in April if you want, because I won't be here on the 19th.
I think this council likes to have the full vote
right,
of the
so
council.
I'm bringing it up now so people can decide whether you want to introduce it for the first week in April, or whether you want to keep it the way it is and then just continue it.
Okay.
Is it all right to just introduce it now and then continue it 2 weeks on the 19th?
We can do that, or we can delay the introduction until the 19th, whatever the council's preference is.
Again, I don't want to mix up the process, but I want everybody to know that I won't be here on the 19th to vote, and I think it's probably a close to a 4-3 vote one way or the other based upon past discussions.
Because it's already advertised, why don't we go ahead and run it through on the introduction.
That's
and
fine.
Then we'll delay if we can get concurrence to delay from the council, and otherwise we'll have a
wanted
split
to make
vote on the delay.
Wanted to make people aware of it. So.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That would put us over on page 9 then for zoning cases. And we have the one on South Country Club Drive, and I think we have some citizens that are going to speak on that at the end of this study session today also. Do you want to give us an update on the request for the postponement?
Mayor, Council, we did get yesterday a request from the applicant that this item be continued to your June 4th meeting. They have filed with the city a request for interpretation of our ordinances that pertain to protest petitions and how those are viewed. So staff will be looking at that. And I believe they set their June date to give time for staff to make that interpretation, for them to have the opportunity to appeal that interpretation if they desire to the Board of Adjustment, and then bring this back to council after those steps have been taken. And looking at the schedule, we believe that if we continue this, we could make it on May 21st instead of June 4th. We think if this goes to the Board of Adjustment, it would be by their May meeting, which is early enough in May, that this could be on the May 21st meeting, again, instead of June 4th, if the council does want to go with the continuance. We did get some feedback then also late yesterday, and I believe you have some information this morning from the neighbors concerned about a continuance and requesting that you go ahead and hold the hearing on Monday and take action and not grant the continuance.
Okay. And has the city attorney had a chance to look at the merits of the request?
Mayor, we have not, since we just received it. However, the process is that if someone is asking for an opinion from the zoning code, it goes to the zoning administrator, and he will issue an opinion interpreting the zoning code. That decision is then appealable to the Board of Adjustments. If either the zoning administrator or the Board of Adjustments changes the interpretation, it will change the issue presented for the council, and it will basically change whether there is a legal protest and a 6 vote of the council required or 4 votes required to pass this. So you are not required to give a continuance. However, it may help in terms of understanding, is the council required to have 6 votes for a passage or 4 votes?
But when was the legal protest filed? Is it a timely letter to now say, I mean, couldn't they have brought this up a month ago if they had an issue with it?
Mayor, we got the legal protest shortly after the Planning and Zoning Board meeting. I have to think a little bit too hard maybe before this early in the morning exactly when that was, but it has been several weeks that we've had that legal protest in our hands.
Okay. I just know the weekend before we're going to hear it, and we talked about delaying this at one other time, I believe also for, I can't remember whose convenience it was. I'm not overly impressed with now on a Thursday to ask for a continuance for a Monday action. If they knew about it several weeks ago that there was a legal protest, they could have said, no, that you can't legal protest this and start the action at that time. So I'd like to hear a little bit more from the applicant at some point on why it just now occurred to them that they ought to take this avenue.
And I guess, Mayor, I haven't had an opportunity to look through the zoning code. I don't know if John knows off the top of his head. Is there a time set out in the zoning code for the period in which they can file a request for an opinion from the zoning administrator?
No, there's not a specific definition for that. There's a time frame for when a legal protest has to be submitted for it to count. It would have been as of Monday of this week. But as far as the request for continuance or consideration by the zoning administrator, there's not one.
And how quickly can the zoning administrator take a look at it? Can the zoning administrator take a look at it between now and Monday?
Well, Mayor, first, I think it will be very difficult. A verbal response, possibly, but a written response, which is what the zoning administrator will be asked to do, probably will not be completed by Monday. Additionally, they then have the opportunity under the zoning code to appeal that decision to the Board of Adjustment. And I think what John is saying, we can complete that process for having the zoning administrator issue the opinion, have it, if it goes to the Board of Adjustment, have that completed and back to the council by the end of May.
And does it take council action to, say, take those steps, or is that an automatic one? And if it's an automatic one, it gives any applicant a way to do a delay on any zoning case, in my opinion. And I'm not sure I, because all you have to do is say, well, I want to protest a portion of what you're doing through the zoning administrator, whether it has merit or not. And if we have to do that, then they get a delay. I'm not sure that I believe that there's a process in place with notification and people want to come in and talk and they clear their calendars, and this doesn't allow for a good interaction with the citizens.
Mayor, Council, I'll give part of an answer, and again, I think Debbie may need to jump in. In terms of the ability in the zoning code for somebody to file with the zoning administrator a request for an appeal or an interpretation of a zoning administrator decision, yes, they can do that at any time. In this particular case, it is affecting this particular zoning application. I'm not sure that it necessarily means that the council has to delay action while the zoning administrator and the Board of Adjustment are handling that, but it would probably be prudent for them to.
And I would agree with John, because okay. The issue here, although it's kind of unique, we haven't had this issue presented before, but the issue or the question that's been asked by this applicant will impact the decision of the council, because it's then, does the council need 4 votes or does the council need 6 votes to pass this application?
Okay, so we could go forward and just vote, and then they can fight it out in court later to see if there were enough votes for or against it, is the other solution.
Right. Mayor, I believe that is an option.
All right. Okay.
That was the point?
Okay. Okay, so I think we need some discussion on where we're going with this then, because there's now a request, and Tom?
I understand the options. I just need to know from the city attorney, does the city attorney recommend us proceeding and voting and then letting the interpretation and the appeal follow?
Councilmember Rawls, I would recommend that you allow the process, at least through the Board of Adjustment, take place before the council votes. You can move forward, but my recommendation is to allow the zoning administrator to issue an opinion and allow the Board of Adjustment to review that decision if either party appeals to it.
Okay. Vice Mayor.
Ms. Spinner, could you remind us of the sequence again? Because if this goes to the zoning administrator, it then gets appealed to the Board of Adjustments. The Board of Adjustments rules on it. There's no appeal to the City Council. I think it goes to, like, the Superior Court, or?
That's correct. That decision is then possibly appealed to the Superior Court. At that point, you know, again, we can revisit it, and the council can. First, we don't know if someone would appeal to the Superior Court. So at that point, my recommendation would be to go ahead and take action. That action is appealable. That's a very long process. So I think at some point, the council does have a right, or the citizens have a right, for a decision to be made. That can be challenged to the court. But for a 2-month delay, my recommendation would be to wait until the Board of Adjustments has an opportunity to hear this, if necessary.
Okay, Rex.
If on Monday it was a 7-0 or a 6-1 vote, this whole protest would be moot one way or the other.
That's correct.
So I don't know, and we don't count votes, but, you know, if it was a 4-3, then there would be something that would be, if it was a 4-3 the other way, it would be moot also. So we have lots of options that we don't need to go through a legal procedure until we know almost where the vote is, and then dispute the vote, the number of votes, and then go to the Supreme Court or whatever you need to do over a period of months, but we know what the vote was, and it may not need to get there if we knew what the vote was.
And that's council's option if you choose to go that way.
Hey, Tom.
Mayor, I don't like delaying this at all, because the neighbors have all made their plans and are coming in, but the lawyer in me tells me that I'm not content with the idea of not having the interpretation ahead of time. I wish it would have been filed 60 days ago when the issue first arose, but there's a part of me that just doesn't like, I mean, Debbie's recommendation is that we wait the 2 months. She must have some reason for doing so. I can certainly see some reasons for doing so. I wish it wasn't the case. I wish we could just go forward on Monday night and get this over with, but my recommendation is that we do continue it.
All right. I would assume that, and we have some speakers at the end, and we also have an applicant. At some point, I'd like to bring them into the discussion. And I'm not quite sure how to organize this thing here as running the meeting, how we get some of the other input, because if we make a decision and don't hear from the applicant or the citizens, I'm not sure that's quite fair either, if we're going to delay. Any suggestions on how to conduct this item?
I started to say something, but it doesn't help the neighbors, because I was going to say we could do it Monday night, but then if they come down on Monday night and we have a continuance, then that's right. Not fair to them. So right. I almost think we have to do it now.
Okay, any other suggestions from council members? I'm more anxious to hear both sides of this from the applicant on why they think they have something here, and from the citizens on why they think we shouldn't. Rex?
I tend to agree with Councilmember Jones. Call them up, let them speak their 3 minutes or a piece or whatever you want to give them, and get their input at least right now.
Okay, because our decision is we either move forward and do the vote and then let whoever wants to appeal the decision after the vote, or we postpone it, run it through the process to see what the interpretation would probably be on the three-quarter vote in this case, wait till that's done, and then we move forward knowing what the probable outcome will be of our vote then, and whether it needs a supermajority or not. Okay, Tom?
Two other points. Rex brings up a good point, but I don't know how we can get there. We can't count votes ahead of time, so I don't know how we count votes ahead of time. But it doesn't take a supermajority to continue it, does it?
No, that only takes four votes to continue.
I don't know what. I would just hear from him and give the applicant a chance to explain why he thinks it's important. Okay. And
is the applicant represented today? Okay. And then if the citizens would try to get a speaker also? Somebody, all right.
Good morning, Mayor, members of the council. Reese Anderson, my address for your record is 1930 East Brown, number 101, Mesa, 85203, here today on behalf of the property owner and the applicant Lowe's. Mayor, in response to some of your concerns, the legal protest that we're specifically talking about here was not by the neighbors to our west and south. It's from our neighbor to the north, Mr. Burden, which was filed much more recently than the legal protest to the south. And so, and we have been thinking about these things, but it's not as if we've had 2 months to do so. It has been recent, and then it's taken us time to work through just normal channels with the large company and also just completing our own legal research to get this together and to you as quickly as possible. We do feel that it is prudent just to solve these issues prior to the vote, simply for the fact that we kind of know whether or not four votes or six is required. Simply put, if I could just shed a little light on our interpretation, as the statute reads today and your ordinance reads today, one of the issues we've raised is whether or not we collapse the streets of adjacent side streets or just the front street. If you don't collapse the side streets, as we think is a fair interpretation of both the ordinance and the statute, then Mr. Burton's legal protest does not apply, and therefore only four votes are required. So that's one of the issues we've raised. And again, just feel it would be prudent to solve that.
What's the definition of collapsing a side street? I'm not quite sure I understand. The distance required across the right-of-way?
Mary, yes, and I hate and I apologize for speaking cryptically, but don't want to waste some of your time. But really quickly, just if we assumed we had a square or a rectangle, we always measure legal protests on 20% of the area of any one side. And the statute reads 150 feet of the, you know, from any side or rear, and then it goes on to say, or the opposite side excluding the street frontage. That same language of excluding the street frontage does not, in our opinion, apply to the sides or rear of a lot. So on this property, where the frontage is Country Club, and you have a small portion of Kiowa on the north, if you include the area of that street, Mr. Burton's legal protest does not apply to this project. And so solving some of those issues now, I think, is just prudent. I hope tough to explain without visual exhibits, and I'm happy to draw if I could.
All right, well, I can think of some other ramifications that it might be interesting to get a clarification on that. I have, as an example, the Riverview. There's a Salt River Project canal behind my house, but I have 150 foot from, which is the statute, so whether I'd be infected, I'm not sure how wide that canal is, but there may be some other issues, same thing with Tom, on buffers mm-hmm. around properties. Okay, I think I understand where you're coming from.
Thank you, Mayor. Any other questions? I'd be happy to answer.
Any questions from council? Okay, all right. Okay.
What was the date of the legal protest letter? I looked through my materials. I don't see the letter.
January 31.
For Mr. Burden, January 31st. Okay, thank you.
All right, okay.
Rex? Before you get too comfortable, I thought there was also an issue of a legislative act versus administrative act, and you were challenging whether we had the right to do this or they had the right to protest because it's a council use permit.
Mayor, Member, Councilmember Griswold, I'd be happy to explain that also. I was just trying to keep it short and sweet under my 3 minutes, but if you'd like to.
No, go ahead.
One of the requests we've also asked the zoning administrator to rule on is, I think, one that's very interesting. As you know, council takes legislative actions and takes administrative actions, and clearly rezonings are legislative. But when you as a council rule on things such as site plans, those are administrative because the rules are set forth in the zoning code already. And so part of that analysis goes to whether or not council use permits are referrable or not. Well, as we all know, legislative acts are referrable, administrative acts are not. Well, it's our understanding that council use permits in the city of Mesa are not referrable. That leads us to a conclusion that they're administrative. A further look at case law shows that use permits in their nature, and this council use permits are similar to other types of use permits, should be construed as administrative acts. Therefore, they're not referrable. And you can then draw the logical conclusion that because it's not a legislative act, it's not a rezoning and therefore not subject to 3/4 votes. And I can go a little bit deeper into the analysis, but that's how it works. We look at the state enabling statutes and where the cities are given authority to require 3/4 votes under the legislative provisions. The same statute that enables you to have conditional use permits, which, again, using that term is synonymous with use permits, conditional use permits, special use permits, council use permits, the same provision that allows you a legal protest does not apply for use permits. And so the question is, has the city exceeded its authority under the state enabling statutes to require 3/4 votes for use permits? And that's one of the issues we've raised.
Yeah, yes. It's interesting in some other upcoming cases that I think about, too.
This is important, probably, because we ran into this in Riverview. We have what can residents refer and not refer to the ballot, et cetera. I would like to get a decision and clarification on this. I still feel that maybe we could do the vote and you could argue it all the way through and then you interpret what the vote means, but I'll listen to the other side, too.
And what's the disadvantages of moving forward, having the vote, and then you know whether it even applied or not? Why take a shot at it prior to the zoning case as opposed to waiting for the action of this council and then do your appeal?
Mayor, simply put, it is just one of efficiency, time savings, and just prudence where if, and I don't want to make any threats at all, Mayor, this, but simply put, if there's a ruling by the council and then there's a litigatable issue, it's off to the courts. Whereas if we could solve it now beforehand, then we don't have to do that. And that's simply the case. I'm not trying to make any threats, just saying that it would be smarter, I believe, for all of us to kind of work on and solve these issues now rather than have something unknown.
But you can appeal the zoning administrator's decision up through the courts anyway, so it could end up in the courts either way.
Possibly so, but until we cross the bridge, we don't know, and so we're trying to solve it simply by taking this route rather than going with, I don't know, for lack of a cliche, the nuclear option.
Okay, Scott?
I wanted to touch on this administrative act versus a legislative act again, and Debbie, maybe I could chime in a little. Excuse me. The reason for the council use permit, well, first of all, let me step back, an administrative act simply would be the approval of the site plan. The site plan makes an assumption here that all of the uses being placed on that property meet the zoning requirements, right? So, whereas a legislative act would be changing the zoning from, for example, residential to commercial to industrial. And there would be no right by current zoning to place a steel mill, take one out of my district, in an area that's designated for housing. You'd have to change that. This body would have to change that by a legislative act into zoning. But the council use permit, essentially the Lowe's store on this site, while it is zoned, what's it zoned right now?
M1.
M1 does not allow a use by right of a big box retail store. Correct?
Mayor, Councilman Summers, as I read the case law and interpret your code, this is my opinion. It is allowed by right, subject to the granting of a council use permit.
Well, the subject to the granting of a council use permit states then, therefore, that it's not by right, that you have to get permission from the legislative body.
And not a three-quarter vote.
And not a, well.
Well, that's the question.
Well, that's the question. So, in that brings up the question, is this a legislative act or is it an administrative act? It seemed that maybe it could be argued, therefore, that because it is not allowed by right, then it is a legislative act. Council use permit is a legislative act.
Mayor, Councilmember Summers, if I may answer.
Smiling attorneys over here just arguing this back and forth in their own heads.
As we look at recent case law on this, and the one case that's very much on point is the case is Rettlesberger versus City of Avondale, which we've cited to the city attorney and to the zoning administrator. That issue was clearly answered by the Court of Appeals, where it said that the plan, the legislative act, was the zoning code and its enactment. And the fact that a use permit is allowed under the zoning code is merely implementation of that plan and therefore administrative. That's, again, my reading of the case law, and I will defer to your zoning administrator and city attorney to advise you on that, but that is our reading of the cases.
Mayor, Councilmember Summers, my only request would be that you let us take a day or two to take a look at this. We just received the application, and we would like to proceed, and we will work closely with the zoning administrator in preparing a response, but I'm not comfortable at this time getting into this level of detail and providing the advice.
2.5 days, do it?
3.5 days, Sunday. Yeah.
We'll give you the weekend.
Vice Mayor.
Now that Councilmember Summers has finished his dissertation and therefore is basically his PhD, perhaps law school is next in the Hall of Fame. The question I have is, if we proceed, and I'm looking at Ms. Spinner for this one, if we proceeded and took a vote, then would, Mr. Anderson said he wasn't threatening us, he was, I think, explaining, but then is there recourse then, rather than through our process, does the recourse then become a recourse to the courts, since the council has already acted?
They will probably have that option available to them and can proceed straight to the courts, and because then they are challenging the council's action.
Right. And I think that that is a very relevant piece of information, because then what that does is that entails us going into court, sending our staff into court to defend the actions of the council. Is that a correct statement?
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other questions? Thanks, Reese.
Thank you, Matt.
Please.
I'm Michael Ginsburg. I live at 433 West Monterey Avenue. Mayor, Vice Mayor, Council members, it was just yesterday at 2:49 p.m. that we received the request for the continuance of the city hearing from Mr. Pugh's office, and did not receive the application for interpretation from Mr. Pugh. He left the neighbors off that list. He sent it to people of the zoning, people from zoning, to city manager, to Lowe's, Mr. Adam Weinberg, and Mr. Brent Payne, who I don't know who that is, okay? Last night, our neighborhood got together and tried to discuss this, and this morning, and we apologize, but we worked on it late in the evening, the early hours this morning, left you a typed letter to you, Mayor, and the council members that we don't think that this request is fair. It's a stalling technique, in our opinion. The applicant has had over 10 months to prepare his case, and now is asking for additional time. We, the neighbors, have not asked for additional time. To refer back to the protests, I'd like to remind the council that the neighborhood had put in a protest originally back December, and the applicant got that invalidated. Now he's trying to do the same thing, get another legal protest invalidated, this one put in by one of our supporters, Mr. Darrell Burton, who owns Fiesta Tech 500 Business Center, okay? Mr. Burton's legal protest is dated January 31st, and Mr. Tom Ellsworth from Planning and Zoning sent me an email on the 8th that says that the letter of protest received from Darrell Burton He had received it and has confirmed that it constitutes a legal protest. So we feel at that point that was good information to move forward. Then the neighbors got together again, and we submitted a legal protest on February 15th for the L-shaped buffer that we've been talking about in one of those ordinances, Z0710 or Z0711. And on I waited a few days, and on the 22nd again, Mr. Ellsworth sent me an email indicating that legal protest had been accepted. We, the neighbors, we don't have an attorney. We tried to get several attorneys, but they don't represent neighborhoods. They represent large corporations. We, the neighbors, have spent a lot of time, a lot of effort. We are in the process right now, or as we talk, our signs are being printed to put up in our neighborhood for the meeting that's to be held on March 5th. We also have a distribution of 1,000 flyers going out today, telling the neighbors that they should be down at the council meeting on Monday evening. We spent a lot of time, a lot of resources. We don't have any more really to give. We're very limited. Therefore, we feel the meeting should be held on the 5th. The whole issue, and none of us in the neighborhood are attorneys, it would appear to us that this whole maneuvering is one of a legal nature, and actually the city council is not the venue to handle this particular matter. If Mr. Pugh, who represents the applicant, wants to do this, he's an attorney, he knows the laws and the rules that are on the books of the city of Mesa, and should let the vote go through, and therefore then take whatever action he wants. If he wants to bring it to court, that would be his prerogative later on. So therefore, we as the neighbors, the taxpayers of the city, the residents of the city, we're requesting that you, the council, our representatives, support us, realize what kind of maneuver the applicant is making, and support us at this critical moment. And we respectfully request that the continuance be denied and the hearing be held in the council chambers on Monday the 5th.
All right. Any questions of Mr. Ginsburg?
Tom? Mike, how much resources have you expended in terms of getting your flyers out and your signs for Monday night's meeting? I know you've got other expenditures just on advertising and trying to rally the troops for Monday night.
Well, let me answer the question as whole. To date, we have got $7,000 in resources, and to date, we have spent $6,000 in our effort to make sure that the zoning is not changed.
And I appreciate that, and some of that's been paid to Jason and other
things.
To our
consultant, yes, sir.
Can you, and maybe it's not fair to you, I'm trying to figure out what the cost to you has been of a delay. In other words, if you were to have to reproduce the cost of rallying your troops for Monday night, how much would that be?
Well, it would be getting paper printed again, getting a letter put out again.
If you had to do everything that you've done for the 4th of March, or the 5th of March, if you had to do that again for either the 21st of May or the 5th of or the 4th of June, what would that amount be?
It could be anywhere from $500 to $600.
Okay.
And Councilman Rawls, the issue is not just the money, it's getting the neighborhood together again.
I understand that. I'm going to suggest that if the council proceeds with a continuance, that we might look to the applicant to cover that additional cost for you, because we can't make up the time, can't clear the schedules again, but I think if the applicant comes in at the last minute like this and files a request that costs the other side money, then that other side ought to be reimbursed for the money. And I'm getting a vigorous nod from Mr. Anderson in the back that they would be willing to do that. So if, and I don't know how this is going to go, but there is a process, and Mike, you pointed out that they do know the process, and part of that process is seeking interpretations of the code. And this is why, as a lawyer, and one of the burdens I have to carry, I guess, is it's just I feel very uncomfortable proceeding without knowing how they do that. And I was the only one other than Rex so far who's come out unequivocally on one side or the other. And
if I may respond,
sure.
Councilman Rawls, Mayor, Vice Mayor, Council members, I think the way the mayor has expressed his opinion is how the neighborhood feels, okay? We spent a lot of time and energy. I happen to be a CPA. It's my busiest season, and here it's now 8:16, and I'm not getting paid to do this, okay? And I'm losing revenue. The issue that it appears from the applications or the way that the applicant has worked in the past, Lowe's will continue to try to refute anything that we, the neighbors, or possibly what the council might say, and I think eventually it's going to end up in a court situation. I mean, you know, courts don't like to deal with municipality zoning regulations, but, you know, the mayor had just indicated, you know, what happens if we take the vote on Monday and then the applicant doesn't like it and wants to move forward? That is his prerogative. I understand where the city attorney is coming from, but we've been working on this for 10 months. It appears, again, that the applicant, and we've seen it in other cases, not here in our city, but in our research, that's a way to wear down the community, because it's hard to get 1,000 people together. It's hard to get people to keep meeting. And if the meeting went to even May or June, what we have there, people going on vacation, people lose interest, possibility of turnover of homes, and basically we start from ground zero again. And that's not really fair to us. We feel we should pursue this. The council has indicated to us here's the date. They made the change from the 20th, and we understand that. And we're ready to go. We've geared up for the last 2 months, and let the chips fall as they may. We're ready for it. If the council votes for us, we appreciate it. If they don't, you know, we understand it too. But let's get this to conclusion.
Okay. Any other questions? Rex?
Now, I was asked by a reporter yesterday what's the most frustrating part of this job, and my answer was when the difference between what's right and what's legal. And this may end up as one of those cases, so I'll listen to our attorneys, but this is going to be a tough decision on Monday. So, you know, I've made it clear where I stand on it, but I want to do what's right, and I don't want to involve the city in lawsuits and having to pay for those either if we don't need to. So.
Any other questions of Mr. Gildenford? All right, thank you very much. All right, direction from council. Let's see where we're headed, and the question is whether we do a delay or not.
All right. We have two more cards submitted, Mayor. Mm-hmm.
Not at this time. We'll hit those at the end. I just wanted to make sure that it was germane to the discussion here.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. I probably need to hear from everyone. So let's go down the line and let's give our opinions on this one. And city attorney wants to figure out when we get to four, we'll know what the action will be. Vice Mayor, you want to start off?
I have been very sympathetic to the neighbors. However, this issue is larger than this issue, because this has implications not only for this case, but for another case potentially that could be coming down the pike at us, and a whole lot of other cases that I can see. And my understanding has altered as a result of listening to all of this, which is that we could end up in court. If we vote on Monday, we can end up in court with us defending something when we haven't been through the process that we have in place. I understand that this is what we would perceive as legal maneuvering, but I guess that's what happens. I mean, we have laws. We attempt to follow those laws. Mr. Albright gave a ruling based on the interpretation that this council has made of those laws in the past. There may be court cases that demonstrate that interpretation has been wrong. Therefore, I would support the applicant reimbursing for time, effort. I think that $700 is kind of light. Just my opinion, but because these folks have worked very hard, I also feel that we should not push to June. I think we have to do everything we can to make it May, because school is still in session in May. It's out in June, and that is, in my mind, entirely unfair to the neighborhood. So that would be where I am.
Okay. Councilmember Griswold?
You know, I think the city has operated a long time on the fear of being sued, and at certain times you meet decisions. Anybody with $50 an attorney can sue you. There's no way you can stop it. In this case, I would say there's some legal issues we probably need to get decided, and probably they need to be decided in courts. I don't think two opinions diverse will probably get us where we need to be. So I would almost say damn torpedoes and just go ahead and make the vote on Monday. So.
Okay, Scott?
Still on the fence.
We both do.
You are up until now.
I'm going to have to. I'm coming down now. I don't like, this is one of those decisions. I decided that on Monday I was going to make. I wasn't going to like it either way, this flu. And I think the decision we're going to make this evening, I don't like it either way as well. Because both sides make some terrific points. I'm particularly sensitive to the fact that the kids come out of school mid-May, actually. I don't know. At least in, on the other hand, my kids are in Gilbert School District, so that might be a little different. But my kids are getting out a little earlier. It's getting really close to summer vacation. I don't like where this falls at all for the neighborhood, and just trying to keep the neighborhood momentum up over the next few months. I don't think that's we're going to be that's going to be very difficult to do. Either way, we have some issues to resolve with this case, and I think ultimately I'm going to have to side with the neighborhood on this one for the time.
Proceed.
So I think we proceed.
Mike?
Question, reference to the second legal protest, that issue is in reference to the distance probably, and not actually, is it within the legal distance? As far as the zoning administrator is concerned.
Mayor, Councilmember Whalen, make sure I understand the question. You said the second protest.
Well, this is the one from the neighborhood reference to the buffer area. And so the issue on that one is whether it's a legal protest versus an whether it's a legal legislative action versus administrative action. That one probably is within the distance required.
Yeah, yes, the mayor, Councilmember Whalen, that's right across the fence. That's right, buddy. That's not the issue.
All right.
That is a result.
As much as I'd like to see this go forward, I think in deference to the protection of the city, I think we better wait for the opinion of the zoning administrator and the city attorney.
Okay. Kyle?
I hate it when it gets close to being even. I've been in this position before.
It's 2-2 right now. You're not the swing
well,
yet.
No, but it's yeah. But like I say, it's still fairly fairly balanced here.
Right.
I hadn't determined where I'd be Monday night yet anyway, because the whole issue has been a big challenge. I understand there are some issues we need to resolve, but my curiosity is, for all the zoning cases and everything that's taken place, why has this issue not come up before? The interpretation, is it just people accepted what the zoning administrator said and that was it? Just curiosity.
Yeah, Mayor, Councilmember Jones, I guess I can't really say for sure why nobody has, but it has been the accepted practice for many years, the way that the ordinance has not changed in many years, and it's been applied the same way for many years, and why nobody's challenged it before, I can't say.
So we have the historical fact behind us of how it has been interpreted for many years, although I am concerned that we have other issues coming up that are going to be affected by whatever outcome there is on this. As in fairness to the neighbors not wanting to delay, I've made this statement before and I've made it to both sides. I'd still like to get back to another site location that had been talked about before, and don't know if a delay would make any difference on that anyway. But, oh boy. You're not going to let me sit on a fence. That's not good. So, I would really like to get the legal issues resolved. But if we do go down that path, it has to be taken care of before school is out, as Vice Mayor mentioned. So I would like to have those questions answered and resolved, not just for this case, but for anything down the road, that we get it out of the way. But I am a little bit dismayed that we didn't get this until right before. I wish it would have come out earlier.
So does that mean delay or proceed?
Let's delay, for now.
Right.
Delay to get it done before school's out.
Okay. Tom?
I've already said that I'm in favor of the delay, although I do two conditions, no later than May 21st and reimbursement by the developer for the cost of the neighborhood.
Right. I'm going to go along with the delay aspect also. I think that there are some significant ones that we're going to be facing in the future. We have an option to evaluate it through our process before. If we don't do it through our process now, then it's going to be a court case, and we're not going to be able to at least have our zoning administrator in our typical appeal process looked at, and then it's going to be the court may even say, well, what would they have said? So I think it gives us a stronger a viewpoint moving forward if we take a look at this. I'm sure of the sentiments. It's I wish this had been brought forward before. It doesn't ring as true as it looks like a lawyer trick, and I'm don't like that, especially the late date and the burden that it places on the neighborhood. And I also concur, let's get it done before vacation time and pick up the expenses so they can re-notify and remobilize the neighborhood so that they can be present. So, Vice Mayor.
Mayor, I just stepped out and called Mesa Schools. School gets out May 24th. That is the last day of school. So we have a meeting on the 21st.
All right. Can we organize and get it through our process prior to that date?
Mr. Mayor, we believe that we can.
Okay. All right. Then the decision on, all right.
Let's just stipulate it is not acceptable to put this in the summertime so that it dilutes the ability of the neighborhood to get here. I think they're very well mobilized. I think we're going to be hearing a lot from this neighborhood in the future because they're all talking to each other. And it is not... It is not a good thing for this to go into the summertime. So can we just somehow?
Well, Vice Mayor, Council, we will do the best we can. I guess one of the issues is this may go to the Board of Adjustments and you know, dictating that they will have a decision by May 21st. I guess I'd like to talk to John and Gordon about that process first. But we are potentially handing this over to the Board of Adjustments.
Well. Then we make a decision on the 21st regardless. I mean, no, we can get to that place where we make a decision on the 21st regardless.
Okay. And I think let's keep briefed on that, and let's shoot for the 21st as the decision date.
And Mayor and Council, if you'd like, we can actually post it that the mm-hmm. public hearing is continued to May 21st, and that way we will have to come back, and if it's going to be delayed beyond that point, the council's going to have to decide that.
I think that's a good idea. That's the sentiment that I'm hearing from the other council members. All right, so post it for a delay till the 21st. Okay. We're on page 9. Page 10 is subdivision plots. All right. Okay, let's then go back to the study session items. Number 2 is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the disposition and development of the southwest corner of University Drive and Mesa Drive.
Mayor, good morning. As was mentioned, we're here to discuss the disposition and development of the southwest corner of University and Mesa Drives, specifically as it relates to the development of a downtown MCC campus. With me this morning is Dr. Rufus Glasper, who's the chancellor of the Maricopa Community College District, Vince DiBella with Samish DiBella Architects, and to my right is Shelley Allen, town center development director with our economic development office. As you know, we've been working with MCC on the concept of an urban downtown campus for a couple of years. We've also considered a variety of development opportunities for the southwest corner of University of Mesa Drives, formerly known as Site 17. In many ways, we've come full circle with this discussion, and we now need your direction to proceed. We updated the council back in June of 06 regarding the individual components of the campus vision. These included programs for health and wellness, community learning, and advanced technology. We were directed at that time to develop a more detailed master plan of the area, including a parking analysis and an understanding of traffic flow and pedestrian connections. City staff and MCC staff then worked with Concord Eastridge, a firm specializing in educational facilities, to further develop MCC's programming and space needs while better defining the actual buildings and layout of the campus. A three-phase approach was considered, growing the campus over time. Massing of some of the buildings was proposed along Center Street in some of the green space, which now fronts the Mesa Convention Center. A potential partner in healthcare and health education was also being explored at the same time as a possible use on the University and Mesa Drive property. And the map that's in front of you, and you have it in your packet as well, illustrates the massing there along Center Street, and this would be the total build-out. I mentioned a three-phased approach. This would have been the final phase, which illustrates buildings for MCC, the need at some point for a parking structure, potential retail development along University. In regards to parking, a thorough analysis was done, which indicated that at build-out, the campus would require 550 parking spaces. The current available parking is 415 spaces. While parking may have been sufficient in the earliest phases of the campus development, additional parking and perhaps a parking structure would have been required over time. The bottom line was we found that insufficient parking to accommodate both the college and the activities at the Mesa Convention Center. Therefore, we determined that the massing of the campus along Center Street was not the best fit for the reasons that were previously stated. We have since shifted our focus back to the property at the southwest corner of University and Mesa Drives. This had been identified in an earlier analysis as the logical location for the campus, and discussions with the healthcare and health education partner did not develop as it had been previously envisioned, making the site once again a viable option. Staff then retained the services of Vince DiBella to update a conceptual plan for the property, considering several goals as identified on the PowerPoint. The most significant goals, obviously, are to recoup the city's investment, return the property to a productive state, and enable the downtown campus to move forward. I'm going to now ask Vince to walk through the conceptual plan that he worked with us to develop.
Morning. Just real briefly, some constraints that we recognized on this parcel. I'd like to note those for you. Major utility infrastructure along Hibbert Street, some existing buildings on the northwest corner of the parcel, the northeast corner, convenience center, store that's remaining, and a residential complex that would remain on the southeast corner of the site. Also recognizing the fact that we have a well-developed neighborhood to the south. One of the components that we looked at was trying to balance the amount of retail office space with parking and adding a residential component to the mix. It seemed logical to perhaps, starting from the south, working northward to provide a residential component that would offer a transition area to the neighborhood to the south. Also look at combining or recouping some of the Second Street right-of-ways. It's a very large street. Making it more of a residential scale. The residential townhome development to the north would be self-parked. It would be individual ownership type units proposed. And we think that would be a very good transition and mix to the overall parcel. The other component was accommodating Mesa Community College. And round numbers, about 120,000 square feet of space or office space would be required for our facility. And the thinking there was to locate that at the south west corner of the site, three-story perhaps building mass and associated parking to the north. The location of that would put it in proximity to more activities to the west and south along Centennial Way, also relate to some of their other campus buildings that they may have in the future. The other pedestrian component that we'd like to integrate with this is that in an east-west direction, provide a linear park that you see in green there that would front the townhome development, also connect the site from the west to the east, and then also provide a pedestrian link that runs north to University Drive. We envision those to be well-developed green spaces, bike paths, some pavilion areas, make it as pedestrian-friendly as possible. Ringing the University and Mesa Drive frontages, we are proposing urban office retail, two-story type structures. We say urban, meaning that we'd like it for it to be very flexible space, combine retail, office, and loft units potentially, make it as flexible and as accommodating as possible to smaller type users. Parking associated with that would be interspersed throughout the center core of this. Also proposing a three-story office complex, if you will, along Hibbert Street that kind of relates to the MCC buildings, and then also maybe interlace a smaller office complex to complete the vision on the northwest corner of the parcel with the existing building. All of this is very conceptual. The parking areas that you see there, when you back into the numbers and find out where we stand, we're about one space per 300 square feet of area. And when you equate that to city standards and development standards, that is very relevant to types of uses and types of spaces required for all those uses. The one thing that we did not account for, and we purposely did not account for any additional parking spaces that may be located in the Centennial parking garage. It seems like there may be some underutilized spaces there that could be used in conjunction with this, but we purposely kind of looked at this as being a self-contained concept, given all the other developments that may be occurring elsewhere in the Mile Square area related to the MCC campus.
Thanks, Vince. Now, Dr. Glasper wanted to make some comments regarding MCC's MCC's commitment to downtown Mesa.
Thank you very much, Ms. Collins. Mayor Hawker, council members, I appreciate the opportunity to represent the Maricopa Community College District and Mesa Community College today. We are proud of the decades of collaboration between the city and Mesa Community College and are committed to moving forward with our partnership with the city of Mesa in building a permanent campus of the college in downtown. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the actions that we are going to be recommending to our board. One would be to purchase the Maricopa County building, and this is already underway between our district and the county. To negotiate with the city for the ownership of the fourth floor of the Carousel View building. To approve an IGA negotiated by the partners for joint construction of an addition to the Mesa Main Library for community technology programs and college library services. And finally, to begin a master planning process for the 9-acre parcel that is being considered by you today. Among the proposed programs to be offered at this campus, as was mentioned earlier by Ms. Dollar, are high demand occupations such as fire science, media arts, education, music business and studio recording, interior design, and network academy courses. Our partners in this campus include Northern Arizona University and Mesa Public Schools, and we are excited about the prospect of building a P20 center in downtown Mesa to deliver education to PK through 12 community colleges and university students. And I have received letters of intent from both of these partners to move forward on this facility. I currently serve as the co-chair of the P20 Council with Governor Napolitano. And this is an exciting opportunity for us to look at the possibility of a P20 campus in Maricopa County, and it could actually serve as a somewhat of a petri dish so that we can see just how P20 could work, and this could really be a great model for us. It could demonstrate that continuum, as it says, from P20 through graduate school. I'd like to thank you again for the opportunity to go beyond the boundaries of our college and city and create this visionary urban campus for our students and in our community. And I tell you that it can be a first, and we are committed to try and move ahead and do the planning that may be necessary. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Glasper. Mayor, I'm sorry.
Vice Mayor?
I have a question for Dr. Glasper. So you foresee that we could have graduate studies occurring on this campus?
What we're looking at, I'm talking about a P20 concept that, I mean, P20 goes all the way through graduate study. Right now, exactly. I'm talking about NAU being here, which will be a continuum of just going through the 4 years of college. I'm not extending into graduate study, but the possibilities could extend in the extended future, but it's not in the present.
So right now you're looking P16 with the potential for going to the 20.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mayor, at this point, we're seeking council direction to first begin negotiations with MCC for the portion of the property that is illustrated for their use, and secondly, to solicit a real estate broker to market the remaining property to a master developer. We would ideally like to have someone with mixed-use development experience who can implement the broad vision for the site, including compatibility with the downtown college campus. And while developing the property as a whole would be desirable, we're cautious to not place specific limitations on the site, and if necessary, we need to remain open to negotiating portions of the property as development occurs. We think this approach will achieve several objectives, including recouping our investment in Site 17, putting the majority of the property back in the hands of the private sector, allowing the city and MCC to move forward on their own timelines by identifying and negotiating a portion of the property for MCC use. They would then master plan their own facility needs within their own time frame. And with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. And what does your own time frames mean? I could see that MCC, I believe, had $10 million in the last bond election that we were talking about before. That's not going to go very far in that size of a building. And
Mayor,
I'm not sure what there's, maybe that would be part of the negotiations to get some kind of conceptual on when this thing could roll out.
Mayor, that's correct. Essentially what I meant by our own timelines is that by carving off that one-third section for MCC, they could continue to develop the scope of the activities on that particular parcel, which would not delay our ability to go ahead and market and do some development work on the remaining two-thirds parcel. But certainly we want the two to coexist, mm-hmm. So we do need to continue to work in partnership.
Okay, yes.
Mayor Hawker, members of the council, as we begin to look at what will drive this, it will definitely be programs. But you recognize that the dollar amount that we have in our bond program is a fixed dollar amount that loses value every day. So we would like to make sure that we begin with the identification of the programs and talk about those initial parcels of land that we currently have and or lease facilities so that we can transfer them as soon as possible and begin a time frame that will move us into beyond 2007, 2010, and into 2012. And we could do it in individual segments, but the negotiation needs to be completed as soon as possible so that we can make sure we know what facilities are available to us.
Okay. Kyle.
Been waiting to say this for over 4 years. Do it.
Okay, Mike.
The parcel Pasadena to Hibbert, is. Do we anticipate that being transferred under some sort of sales agreement to the county, or is it a long-term lease, or how have we looked at that particular? Understand that the Centennial property, we're looking at a bit of straight transfer, but I don't know where we're at on the Pasadena property.
Mayor, Councilmember Whalen, it could be either a long-term lease or a purchase. That is part of the negotiations that need to proceed. And that also includes the Carousel View building. We would also include that in negotiations as it relates to the property that you're speaking of.
We own the entire Carousel View
we
building?
Do.
And can that parking garage be expanded also?
Shelley, do you know?
Mayor, Councilmember Whalen, I don't know if this is on. The parking can't be expanded, but the fourth floor can.
Fourth floor above.
Yes, absolutely.
And then one other question. At one time, we had looked at potentially putting our fire administration building in this area. I'm assuming that we're now moving in another direction.
Councilmember Whalen, that's correct. We will still continue to partner with MCC on fire science training, but we don't envision the fire admin being in this particular vicinity. We have a couple of other options, one being rebuilding on the former on the site of former station number one.
Okay. Thank you.
Vice Mayor.
Thank you. Vince, what was the thought on just going with two-story on the University Drive and Mesa Drive frontage?
It became a factor of what could the parking support.
Okay.
In the vicinity. And we'd like to be able to expand that and look at what's available around us so that that could be a more dense building in terms of more floors. There's also some practicalities once we get beyond three or even four stories in that type of use. We become challenged with some code issues and some building issues and that type of thing. So trying to keep it very practical or buildable.
I was just thinking on the University Drive frontage and on also potentially on the Mesa Drive frontage that you could, and possibly without impacting parking, you could make live-work lofts that had office space on the second floor, live space on the third floor, and that might have a lot of appeal for people who are, you know, doing work-at-home kind of businesses, and I don't think that that would have a huge impact on your parking.
No, and you're absolutely right. That's why we like to keep those spaces at least initially very flexible in terms of what uses could go there.
I'd like people to think in that direction because I think in an urban environment, which is what this has become, that kind of creative thinking would allow for interesting uses in that area that would then play well into the whole downtown area. Thank you.
Okay, other questions? Tom.
I don't have a question, I have a couple comments.
Right.
Echo Kyle's comment to do it, at least as to the West Third with MCC. There's no reason to delay that, and I think it's a good idea. I fall back to where I've been since I got here, which is I'm not interested in micromanaging or master developing with the private sector this site. I'm interested in getting rid of the site and letting the pre-market decide what to do with it. So I'm much more interested in just selling it than I am in trying to control it.
Okay, the recommendation or the direction the council needs to give is what do you want to do with the parcel? I'm concur with the third on the MCC. Let's talk about what can take place there, how we transfer, who pays for what, lease versus purchase. The other remaining parcel, like kind of like what we're doing in Pinal County, let's get a master broker or somebody in there, parcel it up and turn it over to the private side, get rid of it. So, and that, I believe, follows the line of what staff is asking for here this morning. So I am in concurrence. Scott?
I just want to throw out there something that was a bounce off something that was said with we're going with these two and three story buildings because that's what's practical and what we can do with the code. Let's change the code. You know what? We're trying to redevelop a downtown in a way, and I think Tom's right in a way. Let's throw this to the private sector and just say, here it is, wow me. We need rooftops downtown, we need destinations. One thing you always hear about downtown Mesa, when people come to this art center over here, is that we come to the art center, we got no place to eat. This is an opportunity to do that. We talked about, Debbie, you said it yourself, we want to return this to the private sector and make it productive. Well, the only productive part from the city's perspective is the sales tax revenue, and you have three small areas and a whole lot of parking, so not a lot productive with that. I'm not a designer, I'm not an urban planner, this is not my thing. Lord knows it shouldn't be a government thing. Let's throw it into the private sector with a simple instructions. Wow me. Show me something urban. Two stories is not urban. His house is two stories. It's not urban. I've seen it. All right? Well, it's better than mine. It's not quite rural. It's not quite urban. It's white picket fence quaint. Let's wow me. Throw it into the private sector. Let's see something that mixes those use. I think we need to work on this vertical zoning that everybody on the council is talking about. And let's show me something really urban. excite me. This is an opportunity to throw it to the public sector, get something exciting downtown, provide some rooftops that we desperately need downtown, and some destinations, retail, office, mixed use, everything that Claudia was talking about, and someplace to eat, because darn it, I need a Starbucks coffee right about now, and there's no place to get it. So let's put it to the private sector and show me something in the Marriott. I don't need a little booth, I need a store. So thank you.
Vice Mayor.
Thank you. I don't know. I don't think you need any more caffeine right now, Scott. That's just my opinion. I don't disagree with part of what I've heard, but I'm going to say what I've said before. We control this land right now. And, you know, there aren't many things that we control around here. I do not want, at the end of the day, to drive, and I know some of my fellow council members disagree with me, because the private sector, you know, let them have whatever they want. I am sorry, if a payday lender is on this site, I'm going to be ticked off. I'm going to be royally ticked off, because we had the ability to control this, and we didn't. I mean, I know I couldn't get 4 votes on limiting the distance, but good heavens, we own this property right now. And I think we're going to hear from all of our constituents if something good doesn't go on here. You waited for that long for a payday lender? You know, for a dollar store? It's great to say, let's turn it over to the private sector. Yes, with some caveats. I'm great with the wow me. You aren't going to wow me if you got a 99-cent store. It just isn't going to do it for me. And depending on what's driving the market right now, highest dollar amount might go to a payday lender. Although I noticed that they're running ads lately that sound suspiciously like alcohol, don't drink and drive kind of ads. But this is an opportunity for something wonderful, and part of the partnership with MCC, I think, is to get that housing component. So the other way we drive it is with what the zoning is on the parcels right now. If the zoning indicates that you can't put in, or we deed restricted or something, so you can't put in that payday lender, maybe we can do it in some ways that direction. But I am not okay with just turning it over and saying, whatever you put on here is fine with me, I don't care. Just build something, because I'll be happy with it. I won't be happy with it. This is an investment that the city made before we were on the council. Well, most of us, I think most of us weren't on the council. This was an investment the city made 20 years ago or whatever. It's been a long time that these parcels were acquired. And I don't think we should squander that. Thank you.
Kyle.
Don't we have a number of people who are waiting in the wings just for us to give the go-ahead and say, let's do it? Shelley?
Yes, Mayor, Councilmember Jones, we do. That is the case. We have a list of interested developers and people that have expressed interest, that once we do get the okay from council, we will release that information to the broker and have them contact these people.
And these are not small players.
No,
these are
not.
Big boys.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, so the suggestion is to do it through a broker, and I concur with it. Is there anyone that's, Tom's indicated?
I still think we need to do it through a broker. I just wouldn't try to micromanage it.
All right, okay. All right, Rex?
Just a question for Mr. Bella on the footprint of the MCC 3-story building. If you made that a 4-story building and got more parking in the front of it, later on the expandability of it, that you could take that parking out and put another structure or expand it, is that a possibility to start getting some density in there, et cetera? Also to give you some expandability in the future, is I think the NAU program will go very, very well.
Absolutely. I mean, this is very, very conceptual in terms of what you see in terms of footprints and square footages. There's been many plans done on this entire parcel. Yeah. This is just another version of it. But to answer your question, yes, as we do, as you understand parking a little better, there could be more infill pieces added at a later date, more residential components added at a later date because they're not as parking intense. So this whole thing could be very flexible and very dynamic, as I'm hearing the council wants. But there has to be a level of prudent workability with it also.
I know when you go from 1-story to 2-story, you have to add elevators and other expenses there. Where vertically do you start getting expenses that make it prohibitive?
You know, generally speaking, you reach the 4-story mark. You have to go to a different type of construction, concrete, steel. In that 2 to 3 story level, you can go a little more conventional, and you'll see a lot of residential components at 4 stories still be done, still constructed out of wood. That's kind of the upper limit of that, and that's why you see some of the differences that you see when you go vertical. A structure like the MCC building, I suspect that would be of first class, a first rate construction material to allow them to go vertically, either in the future or be able to build onto it at a later date.
Thank you.
Okay, I think the direction then is to proceed with negotiations with MCC and let's line up a broker, and I appreciate the conceptual concept of what could take place there.
Thank you.
I've had a request to switch the next two items around, and I'm going to go ahead and do that. So let's hear item number 4 next, which is to hear a presentation, discuss and provide direction on cultural impact fees. I know the council had all of the discussion on impact fees with the exception of the cultural one. I think we can probably proceed fairly quickly on this one. The only comments that I had, and I appreciate you delaying this a little bit, was that I didn't want to have the art center as part of the impact fee. I thought that was a one-time sales tax to build it, so I didn't want that dollar magnitude thrown into the equation. And the other one was the donated items to the museum. I didn't think that we should evaluate those on the worth if they were not purchased by the community, but were actually donated items. And I believe that those two have been accommodated. There's also a question then, I guess, on that has been raised on whether the cultural aspect of the impact fee could be merged in with the Parks and Rec fee. Is there a reason to have a separate category for cultural, or can those assets that the only one that's a little bit in conflict is probably the museums, because we have a cultural advisory committee and we have a Parks and Rec advisory committee. Do we need the category of cultural at all, or not?
Good morning, Mayor. Terry.
Terry Williams. Fill that out.
Building Safety Director. Mayor, Mesa is unique in my understanding, at least, that we're the only city so far in Arizona that has its own separate cultural facilities impact fee. Several other cities do combine some of those cultural elements in with their parks, okay, considering it in the broader term of recreation, which could include museums. So during our discussions with the industry, the Developers Forum group, this idea was floated also to us a couple of weeks ago. So I have included that. We initially gave the council 3 options for dealing with the cultural. The first was to continue the current rates without changing them. They're slightly higher than the Duncan study would indicate. The second option is to use the fees in the Duncan study. This does take into account the reduction of about $4 million worth of donated collections, as was recommended by the council earlier. And of course, the cultural totally discounts the Mesa Arts Center. The third option we originally identified for council was to eliminate all the cultural impact fees. And that brings us to the fourth option, in which we think we have not yet discussed this with our consultant Duncan or crunched any of those numbers. We can do that if the council so directs. Also, we've not reviewed this with legal at this point. We do believe, though, since other cities are currently doing this to some degree, that we should be that is probably a viable option as well. So I've now indicated an option 4 for the council to consider.
Okay, well, I go along with option 4.
I do too, Mayor. I haven't appreciated the cultural impact fee since I got here, and I think it's important not to be the only one in the community that's trying to do something that's sort of on the edge, and it gives a, it sets a precedent and a message that I really don't want to send. So I prefer option four. I do, however, have a question. In your report on February 8th, you indicate that you, the staff recommends a complete elimination of the cultural impact fees. In the City Council memo that we got dated February 28th, the staff recommends continuing the cultural impact fees. Can you tell me what happened between the 8th of February and the 28th of February?
I can attempt to. We reconsidered the strident position, saying completely eliminate them without considering the other alternatives. In fact, when we discussed it with our consultant, Duncan Associates, their report to the council and through us indicated that we should retain those cultural fees, but actually reduce them again by taking out the donated collections portion of it. So we reverted back and are going along with the recommendation of what the consultant recommended to council.
Chair, you had that information on the 8th of February as well.
We did.
Okay, and you just internally changed your mind?
That's correct.
Okay. Will you, if we take option four and do the Parks and Rec, do we still have to make the kinds take the kind of steps that you've identified here, as we have to devise a plan to expand the cultural facilities, including O&M cost, et cetera? I mean, I take it that legal duty that we have under cultural impact fees continues to apply under Parks and Recreation impact fees.
It does, sir, but we already have a parks plan, and it would be a matter of taking, if council so directs, taking the cultural elements that you want merged in with Parks and Recreation and including that within the overall parks plan.
Okay.
It would be much easier, more easily supported than by standing by itself.
Right, but when we take those cultural elements and move them over, we still have to have a plan for using those fees to build facilities and provide for the O&M. I mean, that legal requirement doesn't go away just because we merge it and call it something different.
Mayor, Councilmember Rawls, that's okay. Correct. We still have that legal requirement. Right.
And I still support that option four, and I think it's a good move.
Okay. Other discussion on it? We have concurrence. Vice Mayor.
Do you need a motion?
Please.
Okay. Well, I will move that we go with option four to eliminate the cultural impact fees and combine some of the current cultural elements under the parks and recalculate the parks recommendations by Duncan. We do have a question, so made the motion. I don't. Okay.
Okay. Question.
So my question is, we brought up some additional questions regarding parks that at some point I'm hoping we're going to have addressed.
Terry, when do we have that scheduled? Do we say in?
I think we agreed on the 22nd.
22nd.
Okay.
Yes.
That's all I needed. Thank you.
All right, Scott.
Curious if under option four, when we come up with a plan, the combined plan, we'd have a parks, we'd have a cultural. How much latitude is there for transferring funds from one portion of the plan to the other? So if we don't do all the cultural elements, whatever that is, can we transfer some of that money to parks to pay for it and vice versa? Or is it pretty much set?
You're asking for a legal opinion, and I would defer to Debbie, but let me pose this as the answer. If it became one restricted fund for parks and recreation with the broader inclusion of what we now have in a separate fund, it should be all types of activities that would be funded through that would be eligible. So that it could not, you would no longer have a distinction of cultural being a separate entity within parks. It would be all considered one impact fee.
Okay, so I'll move closer. So anything currently under the cultural program then would be competing with parks for the same pot of money?
It would all be within the same pot of money.
As those dollars are accumulated, then they would be under one, I don't know if we do it by fund or...
It's a separate fund.
Fund, and so you would have a Parks and Rec Cultural Fund, that for I don't know, probably a better term for it, but it would be collected as one, a specific fee that would be collected for, as in one fund, and so then the city would then have the discretion to, you know, spend those dollars, appropriate those dollars for all those lists of now projects that fit within that parks and cultural activity. So they would be, I mean, in essence, you knew a new park or a new cultural project would be competing.
I'm not adverse to the idea of option number four, but just for my own, I would prefer to hear from some folks from the cultural side of it in parks to see what the pros and cons were before making a final decision, if we were at all amenable to putting this decision off a couple of weeks.
Okay. How does this funding structure line up with our organizational structure as far as management being able to use, you know, if they're looking at what our pot of money is and how I'm going to allocate within my area, so we're not having departments competing on that pot? How does it line up?
Well, that process, because these are impact fees and they're one time and they're related to capital projects, they would be in the capital budget process where we identify the projects that then would be supported by these funds. And so that's how that process would take place, is the prioritization of capital projects related to parks and cultural would determine the allocation of funding as we establish those priorities.
And the capital allocations are actually ultimately approved by the council?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, right. Yes.
We would, okay.
Tom?
I guess a question on the motion, and maybe it's not really on the motion, it's with the language here. We talk about eliminating cultural impact fees and combining some concurrent cultural elements under parks. Does that mean that we still have to make a decision at some point what's going to get transferred? Is Duncan going to make a recommendation as to what gets transferred and included and not, and then we have to act on that?
Mayor, Councilmember Rawls, if this motion carries, my next question to you all would be, do you want to give direction or do I move the entire list?
Right. So then since I don't have the entire list in front of me today, I'm not sure that I'm prepared to make that decision.
Mayor, Councilman Rawls, if I might, the simplest way may be to combine them as they're today mm-hmm. identified in the report. And then when we come back on the 22nd, then we could talk about if it's, because we could take the Duncan analysis, their study, which they did the calculation separately between the parks right. and the cultural. I mean, the simplest thing to do right now for just to get it on the table would really be to suggest, I think, Terry, that those would be combined. And on the 22nd, then we could have the discussion about what that then total fee would be, or combined fee would be. And then we could have the discussion about what's included in the cultural component. And that discussion, then we could decide whether to pare that down or not. And so ultimately, overall, the number that the council saw that was being recommended by Duncan and by city staff really isn't changing. It's just the present or the format, maybe, of the
Really, it's the elimination of one, combining it, and, yes. and renaming it. And I frankly would recommend that we not include the word cultural in the new name, that we keep it as Parks and Recreation with the understanding that cultural is sort of subsumed by recreation, because again, I think having that out there sets a bad precedent. But on the other hand, just to, you know, if Scott, because I came prepared for this meeting today, if Scott will reimburse me for my expenses for a two-week continuance, I'll
That's I got my dollar, you want it?
I got change.
Other questions, Rex?
Yeah, I'm looking over the total impact fees, and Chandler, Gilbert, Queen Creek are $13,000, and Mesa is $5,000, and we're trying to make New Growth pay for itself. But we just can't raise fees and say, you know, we want to be $13,000. We have to be able to show legally that these are the value of our city, of our assets, and you buy in as you move into this city. So we can't inflate our assets to equal what we'd like to get in revenue. We have to follow this procedure with very legal guidelines. Is that where we are right now?
Mayor, Councilmember Griswold, that's absolutely correct. The city can do that as a city, but you can't do that solely through impact fees.
So we have very old facilities that were paid for in $1970, $1980. Is that why we're so much below other cities that are new that paid for new, or is we just started late in the game?
It's a combination of elements. again, Mayor, Councilmember Griswold. It's a combination of elements. It's a matter of that Mesa, remember Duncan's words to us when he was here a few weeks back. It's a matter of Mesa remembering where we are in the development as a city. We are between Tempe and Gilbert, literally and figuratively, in our development. So he was not surprised, as he told you, that our impact fee totals are in between those two cities' impact fees. It's a legitimate statement to say that we started late in the process, you know, 1998, before we got serious about impact fees. That was a, you know, that's been part of a problem. But beyond that, there's also the fact that we have, you know, built in other ways. Our impact fees don't include streets because we build streets by burdening the developers with having to provide all of that portion of the infrastructure for us. It's not in this total. You add all of those together and you look at the total development cost, we're much closer to some of the other cities on this chart than it looks if you just look at the impact fee portion.
I'd appreciate when we compare apples, oranges, as much as we can, if you can try to maybe put those to a side or a side note, so it'd be a little easier to
pull the street portion out. Councilman Griswold, I want to make sure we correct a statement in there. Just because a facility was built back some time ago, the impact fees actually then look at what it would cost to build that same facility in today's dollars. So let's suggest that just because we have older facilities or whatever, that somehow that is a disadvantage to the city. It's really, what I keep saying is it's a level of service. You can only take the current level of service and you essentially prorate it by population or some other means, and then you move that forward into the future and saying the same level of service would be shared by those new residents coming in, and they shouldn't be burdened by anything at a higher level of service than what is currently enjoyed by the citizens that are in the city today. So I just want to clarify that.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, let's see if we can move off on this one here. I think we're talking about combining the two, bring back on the 22nd. If we need to fine-tune it, we'll do it at that point. Does that work? Kyle?
Can we at that time, too, bring back the chart that shows our impact comparisons minus the streets for the others?
Sure. We'll bring back. We have quite a few follow-up questions, I think, from that last meeting. We'll bring back all those. All
right. Vice Mayor?
Some of this that we're talking about is potentially prospective, not what we have right now, but let's just talk about, say, the Vachelet project. Mm-hmm. That would be prospective. So if you put a project like that in, let me take that one because we really don't have anything expended there yet, then if you put it in and you don't ever intend to actually build it, you're just collecting money for it, that would be illegal. You can't do that. Isn't that true? So you can't just collect money, and oh, by the way, we never intended to build it anyway. We're just collecting it so we can build a park out in Scott Summers' district.
What's wrong with that?
Mayor, Vice Mayor Walters, that's correct. The city must have a legitimate plan, and by that I mean a plan that is serious about being constructed ultimately, but there's, you know, it doesn't mean it has to be tomorrow. It doesn't mean 5 years. It could be 15 years out. But it needs to be part of the plan. So that project that you and the mayor have mentioned could be included into now the Parks and Rec master plan, and it would be, we believe, a legitimate aspect.
Okay, thank you.
There's one other aspect of the impact fees is that we had a termination date or a reef, and that's being examined?
Yes.
Okay, great. All right. I think you've got the direction on this. We're going to be seeing it again. I think that's probably enough at this point. Okay, so we'll conclude the discussion on four. I'll excuse Tom from the meeting. Let's go back and pick up three. This is here a presentation and discuss the proposed funding recommendations for fiscal year 2000-2008. And this is CBG, HOME, ADDI, and ESG programs. I'm not sure I know what ADDI is.
Good morning, Mayor. Good morning. And Council. Kit Kelly, Acting Community Revitalization and Housing Director. And I have with me Lisa Hembry, who is our Community Revitalization Specialist. We will try to be brief this morning. I know you've had a lot of issues to discuss. We wanted to just kind of give you a little bit of a refresher course on what's going on again this year. We are going to be holding the first, you, the City Council, will be holding a public hearing on Monday night in which you will have citizens and perhaps applicants speaking in regards to the federal application process that we're going through at this time. And part of our refresher course is to talk about the federal entitlement programs and the city's allocations for those in our proposed funding recommendations. The programs you see listed are the Community Development Block Grant Program. That's our largest program, been around since 1975. We've been allocated over $75 million in that program since it began. The Home Investment Partnerships Program, which is more housing related for housing activities. That program has been around since 1992. The American Dream Down Payment Initiative is actually a part of the home program. We've listed it separately because that is a newer program that came, I think, about 2-3 years ago. That is to help people with acquiring their first homes. And the Emergency Shelter Grant, which is just as its name says, is for emergency shelters and operations of those shelters. I just spoke yesterday with our local HUD office to find out if we have any word on our federal allocations for 07, 08, and of course, the word is that any day now, and I'm expecting any minute now, that we'll be getting those final allocations. As you know, Congress had a continuing resolution on the budget, so we do not have the final numbers at this time. We did get an indication that our ESG numbers have been established, emergency shelter grant numbers have been established, as you'll see on the chart, but we have not gotten the official notification from HUD on that. I wanted to just remind you, this is what we refer to as the book. It's our Bible for the application process, and this is a good reference, and I hope you hold on to this for a while. The sections that are in there include the council report. We've broken up the resolutions so you can take action on those resolutions separately. The second section is probably a very critical section. That's the one that provides the background, gives you a little bit of history. There's some information about how we've used the funds that we had in 05-06. And the third section is the section that identifies the staff's funding recommendations at this time. I did want to point out to you, as we had heard some discussion last year during the budget process, there are the concerns about the administrative costs for the program. And we have made a very sincere effort to bring those costs down. Part of the combination of my position in over two divisions is going to help offset some of those costs. We have had some cuts in staffing to help offset those costs. So we were able to reduce the administrative costs from 15.8% for this current year to 13.4%, and also to reduce the project delivery costs for the housing rehabilitation program. I'm going to turn it over to Lisa now.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. I'd like to please remind you to hold on to your books until at least April 2nd. That's the final Council action date for approval of the programs. Just a few brief things on our activities and programs. We commenced a performance report card last year. We're looking at our nonprofit activities and performance. We look at some of the items on this screen. We look at the schedule, our reports submitted, are they expending the funds according to schedule, are they making realistic goals, are they hitting their goals, and are their financials accurate? So those are some of the items that we're sharing with you on our program activities with the nonprofit agencies at this point. The CDBG program, as Kit said, has been around since 1974. MESA started with it in 1975. These are some of the activities that you can undertake: acquisition of real property, rehab of buildings, both private and public facilities. We're limited to public services to 15% of our annual allocation. We can do code enforcement, economic development activities that are aimed at creating jobs or retaining jobs. The home program is strictly for housing. It does require a 25% non-federal match. This year, we have agreements with Housing Our Communities, and we're implementing one with Habitat for Humanity, where they're providing match to the city so that we can undertake housing reconstruction with home funds instead of just CDBG, and that'll be our housing services. So I just thought I'd share that with you. The ESG program is recommended by the Human Services Advisory Board, although it's part of our process, and it goes with our application to HUD. We began this process on November 9th with an informational meeting to applicants. We go through the application every year. We did implement the joint project with the Mesa United Way. Next year, we'd like to get in and be online with them also. So it's a good partnership. These proposals were due December 8th. Our first public hearing before staff where we presented the projects or applicants presented was on January 23rd. Monday evening at the council meeting, there will be our second public hearing. We are in our 30-day comment period that began yesterday, February 28th. It ends March 30th. We are requesting written comments, and yesterday we public information provided us with that comment request on the front page of the city's website. So that's it, and if you'd like to have, you know, open it up for questions, comments, we'd appreciate that.
Vice Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. I noticed that you have about $150,000 in contingency projects. Was there more than that I missed?
Yes.
Yes, there was.
Yes,
more
and no.
I saw 149,537, and I didn't know if there was another place that I should have been looking for contingency.
Right
at, just
yeah,
didn't see
the
it.
Memo that is right after the recommendations on alternative projects.
Okay, where which tab am I in?
Tab two.
No, tab three, the very last page.
Tab three, the last page. Okay. Okay, that answers my question. That's all I needed. Thank you very much.
Any other questions? All right, seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Item number five is discuss and provide direction on the regional office center as proposed by the MAG Building Lease Working Group. I asked this one to be put on the agenda to give the council an update. I have chaired the building lease working group for MAG for the last 2 years. They are trying to look at the options of acquiring a building for multiple regional agencies versus continuing to do subleases for each of the individual organizations. We have determined a site. We've done preliminary drawings for the site, so we could do agency allocations on the cost and the spaces. It appears to me to be a good long-term choice to own the building versus continuing to lease. And I'm going to kind of move forward with that direction to see if the decision can be made on the regional council level to go ahead and actually construct one. I guess it would probably be a little bit like the Arizona Cities and Towns that owns their building, paid off the lease, and now has just the operation and maintenance expenses as opposed to continuing to move around for leases. This would be a downtown location, so it would have some rail access to it. So that's why Metro Rail is a potential member. The one that is still in question, there was actually a 5-3 vote that AMWA, Arizona Municipal Water Users, would not become a member. They had some floor space, about $3 million worth of an $86 million building was allocated to AMWA. That space would be reallocated to the other organizations if they continue to decide to not be a player, although a couple of the members are reconsidering their votes. I thought that it would be good to get the organizations together for the economy of having the same meeting space for our time when we go to meetings, the security, combining of human resources and payroll and such, and get some economies of scale. There's also in some of the backup information the commonly asked questions and the responses to those. The legal structure is a little bit complicated because it goes through a 501c3, three different separate leases. It all works, but there's a page that, see Mike looking at his, there's an actual diagram that will assist in trying to get through all those steps. And I just wanted to get any feedback if anybody had read the information and thought that we were headed in a direction that they were not comfortable with. If I receive none, then I'll proceed as I have as chair of that to make sure that it makes good economic sense to do it. And if it does, we proceed. If it doesn't, we say we'll continue to do existing leasing in the downtown area. So, Rex.
I trust your decision. It seems to make economy of scale, and you've always been fiscally conservative. You're business savvy, so I would say go ahead.
Okay, this does have a longer term implication, and the immediate one is in at least AMWA and possibly one other, I can't remember what, that we would actually have a larger assessment here for up to like 10 years, and then it's there's kind of a break even, and then you get the money back. So the short term, it's we have some very favorable leases, and we could get by for another 5 years probably very favorably. So this is a longer term view. I just wanted to make sure everybody understood that if some of the assessments come in higher, that may take place for a couple of years, not dramatically. But then as the leases would have been renegotiated, you're in a fixed cost building, and over time, you get the benefit of it. So, Rex.
So you're taking the investment, you know, you pay a little more now and you gain it over a period of time view rather than the quick returns now, and then when everything goes up 50% in 5 to 10 years, you're stuck on a very high lease.
That's correct. There are spreadsheets going out 30 years. I know everybody would be really anxious to dwell into those. And it'll show the existing lease kind of at the bottom, and then it shows the break-even point, and then it shows the actual positive return that you get over the 30 years for each of the organizations that we're a member. We're one of only four cities that are members of all four organizations that have looked at combining into this one building because of Metro only having four members. Scott.
Katie, do we know how much that will cost?
It'll be $87.6 million, I think, was the total for the building.
How much for the city of Mason? What would we say?
Each one has different allocations because we're set up for four different ones. But basically, if you figure a $26 lease rate currently, and we have to go in this one at about $38, that's the gap that in one organization you'd have to make up. The other ones, we take it from administrative expenses. So instead of doing another study, because we have Prop 400, we have $4 million worth of money for administration, it won't go up at all. It'll come out of that fee. But that is one less study that you might be able to do on the first 10 years than more studies you can do after you break even at the last 10 years. So there is going to be a work session on March 6th in which they'll go through the details of all the breakdown for the regional council members, for city staff, finance directors, so everyone can take a look at that and ask questions in more detail. All right, Vice Mayor.
Tina, one of the things that the league is doing, I think, is that they're leasing out some space to the community. I think it's to the community college district. I'm not sure who they're leasing it to, but to somebody. And maybe I missed it when I looked at this, but I didn't see a place where you talked about building
at future capacity and leasing out space currently to help make up some of the costs. Was that part of the consideration?
It was. It's difficult to figure out when everybody's going to grow, especially regional transportation. If we consolidate operations, we'll need considerably more space than this building will even provide. So in the leases, there will be provisions on how all that works, and if you want to sublease out and who you can sublease out to. There's also the bottom floor is a residential component. Because it's a 501c3, it's limited to no more than 5%. It can be a commercial activity. And to the west side of this building is a set of kind of like brownstone housing to do a neighborhood buffer, but that's a separate and distinct parcel and project away from the regional council building.
Well, it seems to me that you're better off buying the house than renting the apartment, so I think it's a good idea.
Okay. All right. If the numbers work out, and that's what
absolutely.
We're trying
to, yeah. Absolutely.
All right. I just wanted to give you a little update that I'm working on it, and if you have more questions, be glad to answer. All right, let's go on then to item number 6, which is here reports on meetings and our conferences attended. Yep, Scott.
Mayor, you and I and Vice Mayor Walters were in attendance to the ULI study about getting a, I want to keep wanting to call this a sub-area plan for that area in my district, but the city manager keeps throwing a shoe at me when I do that. I think, what are we calling it, comprehensive?
Strategic.
Strategic plan this week. It's a strategic plan, bounces off the ULI study. I'd like to thank Brock Arnett for helping host that, as well as ASU Polytechnic. I was a little bit late. I apologize for that. My wife had to go over. Unfortunately, I had to drop her off at Sky Harbor Airport for an emergency flight back to Wisconsin for her father. I would have preferred to drop her off at our airport, but one day perhaps we'll be able to do that. So,
okay. Vice Mayor.
Well, I appreciate the explanation for why Mr. Brady's been going around barefoot. We've all been wondering. Throwing shoes at you would take care of that. on Saturday, Kyle Jones and I were at the Caledonian Society Gathering of the Klan at Mesa Community College, and that's always a fun event to go to. I took my father and my father-in-law and my husband along with me, and we got authentic fish and chips, which was important to my husband because they had malt vinegar. That makes them authentic or something. The MCC Commission on Excellence, Rex Griswold and I were there this last week and had a very, very good presentation on the importance of education and higher education to the United States. It's actually frightening if you listen to it and if you don't intend to do something about it, but we intend to do something about it. Also on Sunday, I was at the ribbon cutting for the new congressional office for Congressman Mitchell. Tom Rawls and I have part of our district that is in Congressional District 5, and the mayors of the communities there and the council members, there were from all of the communities I believe that Congressman Mitchell represents, were there for the ribbon cutting. And Mayor, I understand I just missed you, so I guess you were there as well. And then on Saturday, I was representing Councilmember Summers, who was unable to be there and had asked me to participate in a ribbon cutting it for Desert Schools Federal Credit Union at Signal Butte and Baseline. And if you haven't been to Signal Butte and Baseline for 6 months, okay, you need to go to Signal. I hadn't been to Signal Butte and Baseline for probably 6 months, and wow. It's different, and it's good stuff, really good stuff. And there are a bunch of others, but maybe I'll save them for Monday. Thanks, Mayor.
Right. You mentioned Congressman Mitchell. He spent probably over 2 hours out at Williams Gateway on Monday. We were able to give him a tour of the Williams Gateway and talk to him about some of the congressional requests that we are submitting. He's very favorably inclined to support what we're doing out there. I was very impressed with the development and hadn't been there for a while. I was kind of wowed by how much stuff was going on. So I have worked with Congressman Mitchell before in other subcommittees, and I think that we'll be well represented with his presence in Congress. Mike.
About three things, Mayor. Number one, finally finished yesterday the Palo Verde to Bakersfield 500 kV line. It was 18 sessions over 18 separate meetings. This is a 500,000 volt line that will run from the Palo Verde hub to California. Very controversial case. It was approved 8-3 yesterday. I don't know whether the Corporation Commission will approve it or not, but that will be coming up shortly. And the issue there is California importing cheaper Arizona power. But the issue that was really important to, I think, the state of Arizona is the fact that we have tremendous congestion at the Palo Verde hub, and this allows some redundancy in getting another line out and will also, I think, help our market in the long term. And then was late because of that hearing to my District 2 town meeting last night. It was about an hour and 15-minute commute from Glendale on the 202. But it really didn't matter much because we only had about 10 residents there. It was very, very disappointing to the fact we had 35 staff and 10 residents that showed up at our district town hall. So either I'm not doing something or we're not doing something, or there's tremendous apathy within our community as to what's really going on. Our pancake breakfast was much better, so maybe we look at doing something that in the future. And then I'm unveiling the new HoHoCam uniform today, which that we've gone to a darker color. Today is opening day, and hopefully we'll have a very productive season to infuse more dollars into our community.
Looks like I'm going to have to change shirts because I brought my old one. So, okay.
We're giving you a period of dual usage.
All right. Okay. Thanks, Mike. Rex.
On Friday, I was at the Chamber of Commerce Awards Banquet for outstanding businesses in our community, for small business, large business. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of new businesses in our community, which is a great sign. And then Monday, I was at Tour de Phoenix meeting for the 74-mile bike race that actually goes halfway through Mesa. And I don't know why it's called Tour de Phoenix still, except they originally put some money into it. About 1,200 bicyclists. Average price of a racing bike is now about $2,000. They have $9,000 bikes now, so it's changed since I used to do it. And it'll be March 31st, Saturday. It closes part of our streets along Power and University and then back down Usury Pass. It was up around the B line all the way back. And people in better shape than me are in it. So.
Okay. Anyone else on meetings? All right. Scheduling of meetings and general information, Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Reminder to the council, Monday, March 5th, we will have our city council meeting study session, but we'll be also conducting interviews for city auditor beginning at 2:45 p.m. on Monday. So, and those materials will be provided to you, so you'll have that, the background information. And of course, we'll have our study session on March 8th at 7:30. And another one on Thursday, March 15th, which will be followed by a Transportation Infrastructure Committee. Thank you, Mayor.
On March 5th is the Audit and Finance Committee, a public meeting. Are they going to be at those interviews? Is that?
No, this is for the whole council, Mayor.
Oh, that's all right.
That's what was the idea, was to bring it to the full council.
Okay.
For the interview.
All right. Okay, Vice Mayor.
Do we convene an executive session? So do you post that as a regular meeting, then we convene an executive session, we go into the gold room back here, and then have the, is that how we do it?
Yes, and I assume that's what the council wants, is to conduct the interviews in an executive session. The statute permits that.
Yes, we did that when we hired you, we did that when we hired
Correct.
Mr. Brady. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions on Rex?
Do we have to post publicly that it's Scott Summers' birthday on Monday or not?
Oh, okay. Oh, just how old he is.
I'm not 40 yet.
I don't even want to hear it.
Yeah, you're right. Pre-scheduled public opinion appearances. We have none. Items from citizens present. Are there any?
The speakers we had did withdraw their request.
Okay. Then the study session is adjourned, and we'll be back on Monday.